That tells you, would tell you so much about the
Absolutely.
teacher.
Absolutely. And you know, frequently the ones who fall on their face during something like that are the conservatory trained musicians who are no doubt absurdly talented at activities like that, but they just don't know what to let go. They don't know how to simplify a rhythm. They don't know how to take out the tied notes and make it more easily playable. Because really I'm looking to see what their skills are on the ground in the real world when they're presented with a situation like that.
You're watching Tim Topham TV, the Piano Teaching Podcast, and this is episode number 67. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Tim Topham TV, where you, as piano teachers and music professionals, can get all the latest tools and tricks, techniques, ideas, creative inspiration, innovative technology, and all the latest, greatest things that I've found around the world and in my own teaching, right here in your earbuds, whether you're at the gym or walking the dog or riding a bike or driving your car. I'm glad you're with me today, and I hope you enjoyed today's episode. So today's episode is with a fantastic guest called Abraham Levitan, and he is going to be talking all about how he's built his piano academy. And it's a little bit different, and that's why I really loved this conversation, because this isn't an academy or a music school in the sense of a bricks and mortar building. This is actually a traveling piano school. So all of his staff actually travel to students' houses. And the way he goes about managing that, the way he goes about hiring his staff, he actually goes and gives us all his secrets about how he interviews them and what he gets them to do to make sure they fit the philosophy of Piano Power, which is the name of his school. How he goes about all of that, and why he's chosen this model. These are the kind of things we're going to be covering, and it's a great interview. I know you're going to love it. Whether or not you're actually looking to expand into building a whole big studio with multiple teachers, doesn't really matter, because I know that you're going to get a lot out of just listening to him, his passion, and his philosophy. Now, a couple of reminders just before we jump in. Thank you very much to everyone who completed the survey about the podcast that I put out probably a month ago now. And it was just a one-question survey asking how upset you would be if I stopped showing my face and moved from video podcasts to audio only. And the overarching response was that while it's great to be able to watch, mostly I listen unless there's something particular to watch. So as of next year, I'm going to be moving to an audio-only podcast. But that doesn't mean you won't see my face anymore, because what I'll do is for those episodes that are very visual, for example, we had, of course, I'm thinking people who have been performing. We had Vashti Somerville, who was showing in her studio all her instruments, and we could watch her kids actually, her work with her kids, things like that. For those kind of episodes, we'll still be live, and we'll still do video, but it might not be part of the podcast, or maybe the podcast will continue to be audio, but I might put the video on YouTube. Still kind of working out those kind of things. Also, a reminder that transcripts are now available. That was a big request at the survey I did in the middle of the year. Everyone said, yes, please provide transcripts. So if you're one of those people who've said yes, this isn't a cheap thing for me to do. It's costing a bit of money. Because I don't have time to obviously transcribe every episode myself. So I do hope you're making use of those. And if you've got any issues with them, or you don't think they're valuable, or whatever it is, please just shoot me an email to let me know your thoughts. But they are available on the podcast show notes page. And you can find the show notes for any episode by just typing timtopham.com/episode10 or episode 23, whatever the number is. And if you just want to search for it, just head to timtopham.com/podcast. Finally, Black Friday is coming up in the States in a couple of weeks, and I'm very conscious of wanting to offer some special deals there. So do watch out for your emails in the next little while. If you happen to be listening to this and you're not an email subscriber, then I would highly recommend you get on my list. The simplest way of doing that is to head to my homepage, timtopham.com, and scroll right to the bottom. There's a little place to pop your email in there. I will be offering some special deals and discounts over the Black Friday to Cyber Monday weekend, which is at the end of this month. So if you're listening to this on the day of its release, which is around the 18th, 19th of November, then you've still got a couple of weeks to make sure you're on my list. So let me introduce you to today's guest. Abraham is the founder and head of Piano Power, a teaching group offering in-home music lessons to over 400 students in Chicago and the northern suburbs. He also hosts his own podcast. It's called Nerds on Tour, funny name. It's available on iTunes, and he talks with music people about money, motivation, and the rest of life. If you're interested in this idea of hiring teachers wanting to find out a little bit more too, I would recommend you head and listen to episode number 7. That's timtopham.com/episode7, the number 7, which was all about how to build a multi-teacher studio with the fabulous Carly McDonald from Adelaide here in Australia. And Abraham also wrote a blog post, if you missed it. It was a couple of weeks ago, maybe a month ago now, called Hiring Piano Teachers, How to Set Priorities for Your Studio. You'll be able to find that through the homepage of my blog, timtopham.com/blog. That's a lot of timtopham.coms to remember, isn't it? Basically, got any questions, just shoot me an email, but head to the homepage. You should be able to find the links at the top. And with that, I think we'll head over and meet Abraham. Abraham, great to have you on the show today. Welcome.
Thank you for interviewing me, Tim. It's a pleasure and an honor.
It's going to be a great conversation because I was really interested to find out about your business model. And that's really what we're going to be talking about today. Abraham is a music school owner, but a little bit different, at least in my experience, in that your staff are all traveling to students' houses. And I might be a little bit out of the loop, but I haven't heard of this happening all that much, certainly not in Australia. So I'm really interested to dig in and find out a little bit more about how it all works. But before we do that, can you just tell us the brief little bit about your music background and the sort of the starting of Piano Power, your music school?
Sure. So yeah, the school is called Piano Power. It is based in Chicago and the suburbs of Chicago. And I moved to Chicago immediately after college. I went to Yale University up in the Northeast, and I'm originally from the Midwest, a town called Louisville, Kentucky, which is most famous for Muhammad Ali and for the Kentucky Derby. But I was born in Chicago and had some roots there. And so after college, I moved back to Chicago and was making a go of it as a rock musician, which will hopefully connect with some of your audience.
Yeah.
And I started my own private teaching practice on the side while I was doing that. To back up to your question about my own music background, I was a history major at Yale.
I was not
a music major.
Right.
But I sang in an a cappella group, which has some recognition around the globe. It's called the Whiffen Poofs. I seriously doubt if any of your audience has heard that.
Who thought of that name?
it was thought of in 1909, I believe, which explains how it sounds like it's something from a Lewis Carroll novel or something like that. So I did a cappella singing in college. I had my rock band, and you know, music for me was pure extracurricular joy. It was not an academic pursuit. And so when I started teaching piano lessons on my own in 2000, quite frankly, I was going by the seat of my pants and thinking, what do I love about music and how do I translate that into enthusiasm for my students? Suffice to say, I had had piano lessons myself, classical and jazz, all throughout elementary school, middle school, and high school. So I did have that background to fall back on. But as far as coming in with a method, my method was to keep my students engaged and to do that by any means necessary. So it was very pro pop music, very pro original composition, you know, busting out little arrangements of Kelly Clarkson songs in 5 minutes and having them work on them during the week. So very
similar approach to how I came through as well, because I didn't have that that long conservatory training or anything like that. Although I had a music degree, it wasn't in piano specifically. So I was kind of the same. I'm like, okay, how do I keep these kids engaged? Let's do what works.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I mean, you know, conservatory training, we can go into hiring later because I know that was a topic you wanted to discuss. But conservatory training to me can be a double-edged sword when it comes to evaluating potential teachers because sometimes the realities of working with a seven-year-old who's squirming around on the piano bench and kind of wants to be there and kind of doesn't – requires a very different skill set from what works in an academy or university setting. And I sometimes think that teachers who go into it with nothing but the sense of, well, I really love music and I want to communicate that enthusiasm, are often a little bit more flexible in those kind of situations. So anyway, back to how Piano Power sort of evolved from that. 2001, I started teaching myself. I never had, you know, I hear of teachers that have 100 students every week. I never got to that level, but I had maybe 40.
That's probably why you're still teaching.
And around 2007, after I had been doing it for 6 years, you know, I developed a waiting list. I'm certainly not unique in that category, but it kind of happens once you have your own practice and new families start calling and you start saying things like, well, I think in 2 or 3 years, I might have a spot available. And a parent of a 6-year-old that really wants to start lessons does not want to hear that at all.
Yeah.
So at that point, you know, I started thinking, well, maybe there is room to have other instructors that are like-minded who can help me process this waiting list, essentially. So there was no plan. I mean, I'm a very type A person and I love planning. So like when I started having a business, I went out and got Small Business for Dummies and, you know, personal MBA for dummies and all this stuff and just tried to act like I knew what I was doing. But really, it was a very seat of the pants operation for the first few years. And we will now have our 10th anniversary this coming spring, and we're at about 425 students, which is at least four times what I ever dreamed of having. So
brilliant. Well, congratulations, firstly. It's brilliant growth. I find it, I think it's going to resonate with a lot of teachers listening, this point, which a number of them get to, and I get asked questions about it, but particularly in our community as well. What do you do when you get to this point where you've got too many students to teach yourself? And taking that next leap seems almost too big a leap for many teachers, and so they won't go that next step. So I definitely do want to talk about hiring staff and how you go about doing that, because I think that is one big barrier for a lot of teachers. But before that, just give us a quick overview. You've got about 400 students. Are they all learning piano or is there a mixture? And do
No.
they have one lesson a week? Approximately how long? What's kind of the average?
Yeah. So much like Starbucks coffee, I came to regret the name Piano Power on a certain level because it seemed to suggest that the offerings were more limited than they actually were. Starbucks, as it turns out, offers tea and pastries and terrible sandwiches as well, but that's nowhere to be found in their name.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay.
And Piano Power also offers guitar, voice, and drum lessons. Piano lessons will always be the bread and butter. It's about 2/3 of the total right now. And, you know, a lot of our teachers are multi-instrumentalists. They're pianists who have secondary instrument skills, and that's kind of how our offerings evolve as well. We do weekly lessons. I've experimented being more flexible with that, but it typically does not work in the teacher's favor. Since it creates, you know, if somebody wants lessons every other week, then suddenly that teacher has a vacancy. And so as a business person, you're always poised between wanting to take in new business and also wanting to have pretty fixed borders around what you offer so that you don't try to be all things to all people, because that'll drive you crazy. So that was one of those small decisions that I made early on, was that it was weekly lessons or no go.
Right.
And the other factor that I think makes it work, especially because we're going from house to house instead of in a studio, is that we do not do 30-minute single student lessons at any house. It needs to be at least 45 minutes. If we do 30-minute lessons, it's because there are multiple kids back to back.
Oh, okay.
So you start to see these logistical decisions that you have to make, where you cannot be all things to all people, but ultimately, it's a teacher-centered business. If the teachers aren't happy, you don't have a business.
Go ahead. Well, you wrote a great blog post for us a couple of weeks ago, which we'll link to in the show notes, about hiring teachers and how you put them at the center of your timetabling, I guess. So it's not right. at the whim of every parent that little Johnny wants his lesson at 4 o'clock on a Tuesday. It's like, well, actually, is that going to work for my teachers? I think this is your approach, right?
Right. And you know,
perhaps that's something that people get wrong sometimes, do you think?
Yes, I do. I could just pause there, but I think you want me to elaborate. So, I mean, yeah, when people get it wrong, I think it's because they're in the early stages of a business and they want to say yes to everybody because they want to grow the business as fast as possible. Now, Piano Power, yeah, we have 425 kids in the program now, but we've also been around for 10 years. And after year one, we maybe had 50 kids. And after year two, we maybe had 65 or 70. So it was never this idea of we're going to be a national conglomerate and I need to have this hockey stick growth pattern to please the shareholders. I mean, this is a family style business that my wife and I run together. And as a result of that, you're not obsessed with growth. You're obsessed with kind of, I guess, what is sometimes called the inside out approach, which is essentially take care of the people that are already with you, whether those are teachers or clients, and then word will spread from there, as opposed to obsessively marketing to the outside world and not taking care of the people that are already with you. Mm. In the blog post, I think there's a subhead that says something like, beware the client-centered approach because it doesn't favor the clients even if you think it does. Mm-hmm. We were a lot more concise in the blog post, so please read it. you know, when a business like Piano Power or any other music studio says that they are exclusively looking out for their clients' interests and that clients always come first, that probably means that it's not a great place to work. And therefore, the teacher turnover is pretty high. And, you know, if those things are not in balance and teachers don't feel great about their work environment being respected, then you can bring in a lot of clients really fast, but you're not going to have that continuity.
Mm. Do your teachers tend to hang around for a few years?
Yeah, I mean, so you know, the nature of the beast is, a lot of our teachers are in their early 20s, maybe right out of undergrad, and maybe either going through a master's program or trying out the real world for a few years before they do a master's program. Mm-hmm. So demographically speaking, the odds are stacked against us of teachers being around for a long time. Mm. But that being said, I do ask for a 2-year minimum commitment from all of our teachers. And I get that a great majority of the time. And I've had teachers that have been with me for 5-6 years at this point.
Wow, brilliant.
So, I mean, you know, that is your ultimate asset is teachers who deliver the goods year after year. I mean, that is what makes your life easier from the entrepreneurial perspective than any other factor. Mm. And so I bend over backwards for my teachers and I don't apologize to my clients about that because that makes their experience better too.
Yep. Now, I think I would be right in assuming that you, when you first started teaching, traveled to students' houses.
Yes.
Yep. As I did and as a lot of us do, it's the easiest way to get started. Obviously, it's the most convenient for parents, but it's not the best model for teachers, in my opinion, and that's why I don't do it anymore, because you've mm-hmm. got all this travel time that you're not necessarily compensated for. So why is it that you stuck with that model, whereas most of us tend to go, as soon as we can, you're coming to me now?
Yeah. I'll give you the simplest answer, which is that it was the model that I was already participating in, and the idea of suddenly making a U-turn, pardon the pun, and opening up a physical space was too much for me to handle. I wasn't even 30 years old when I started this business, and I was thinking physical space, studio, insurance,
rentals,
what, rentals. My head was exploding. So this was a model I was already familiar with. Now, the compensation issue that you bring up is, of course, very top of mind with all this. If you are offering lessons in the homes of the students, you are not going to compete on price with lessons that are in a studio. So, I mean, what I'm saying in more blunt language is that we charge more than lessons that are in a studio.
Right.
Our teachers are paid more as a result of that. And we also have a regular gas subsidy for our teachers.
Right. Gas so, being I mean, yeah. petrol, fuel.
Correct. Petrol.
Yep.
Which okay. I'm sure will all be much cheaper under President Trump, who's going to frack America into oblivion. But that's a subject for another time.
So we should tell everyone as we're recording this, literally the election happened last night. Last yes. night out my time, today yes, your time.
Which is why I'm wearing black, if you can see that in your video screen.
In morning. Oh dear. No. Let's not even open that up for conversation right now. So the gas subsidy, depending on how far the teacher travels, I assume, or there's some kind of metric that you work out, is there?
Right, yeah. Right. I mean, yeah, it actually has to do with the number of days they work per week.
Right.
Yeah, it's another thing where you have to find a balance between a simple system that works and a perfect system that would be way more labor intensive, right?
Yeah.
So like the simple system that works is, okay, you work this many days a week, you're going to get this much for your petrol. The more complex system would be track your mileage and submit it to me and you will get a fee based on that. And that is a level of record keeping that we don't want to do.
Right. Fair enough. If it works, stick with it, right? Keep it simple.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So give us a couple of the advantages and disadvantages for this model, because I have a feeling there's be some people listening going, you know what, that makes sense. I could almost get my head around doing that. Like you, I don't necessarily want to throw myself into huge rentals and contracts and all that kind of stuff, but maybe a couple of teachers teaching with me who go to the students' houses, maybe I could do that. What are some of those pros and cons?
Yeah. So, I mean, advantages, you know, we've already covered. I get to work from home. There is zero commute for me. There is zero pressure to maintain a physical space.
Sorry, hang on. You said you work from home.
Yeah.
So you personally teach in your home?
So that's a great question. Okay. So I have a 2-year-old daughter who is taking a nap right now and will hopefully continue to nap throughout this interview.
Good.
But since she was born 2 years ago, I stopped having a practice of my own. So I am purely admin and management at this point.
Oh, okay. I see.
So just to give you an example of my day, after I wrap up with you, I'm going to head out on the road and observe a couple of teachers in action.
Right.
So, you know, I have kind of a regular shadowing practice with all of my teachers, and that's something that they're comfortable with because it is pretty low key and leads to a dialogue about how to become better teachers.
Excellent idea.
So, you know, I mean, this probably gets to some of your later questions about how do you keep track of people that you don't see.
Yeah, totally.
But yeah, back to the business model in general of doing in-home lessons, not having a physical space to me is a huge weight off of my mind. You know, initially convincing teachers that this is going to be a good work environment for them when I know that they're also interviewing with music studios. Obviously, there is a logistical factor of driving that you don't have to deal with when you're going to work at a studio. But that being said, I think the pay is more than fair to make up for that. And also, we have just a philosophy of putting teachers first that I can tell you most studios do not practice. And that is evident in every aspect of the way that Piano Power is run.
Great. And the parents obviously like it too, because it's far more convenient for them, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Of course.
Yeah.
Disadvantages, you know, I mean, I guess when I was thinking about talking with you about this business model and talking to potentially a global audience, I think Chicago is kind of a unique city for this. Chicago is pretty drivable. It doesn't have like the huge traffic snarl of like an LA or a New York,
right?
Or a London, God forbid. And so there are just certain physical locations that seem to work better for this. I mean, Chicago is kind of a perfect mix because you have a high concentration of young musicians. It's pretty normal to have a car, and there are some suburbs that are very close to the city that once you're out there, you can hit a bunch of houses and then head back into the city. So even if you live in Chicago, as I do, and as most of my younger teachers do, it's often much more sensible to just commit to driving out to the suburbs, hit four or five houses, and then head back home. You're not in rush hour either way. And so the logistics of this particular case seem to work out, but I would just encourage everybody to sort of evaluate their individual location and market, because I'm not sure if it's like a universal solution for everybody.
Good point. Do your staff teach a method, or, you know, teach things as you've set it up a little bit like a franchise, or are they free to teach as they wish?
Free to be you and me. There is not a specific book or set of books that I recommend that everybody use. I'm certainly standing by to give my opinions on books whenever one of my teachers wants to dig a little bit deeper in that. But I mean, just to go back to that point between a simple system that works and a perfect system that might cause excruciating problems with your workflow. If I were micromanaging every single book that every one of my teachers used, there's no way that I could have scaled the business to where it is now. Giving teachers the freedom to make those choices, I think it makes them better teachers. And it also kind of allows me to run the kind of business that I want to run. So long story short, the philosophy is consistent among all the teachers, as far as kind of having great interpersonal skills, allowing for composition, pop music, fun, as well as theory and fundamentals. But it does not advance to the level of, okay, you have finished with Piano Adventures level one. Now you are going to Faber and Faber Playtime level 2A.
Yeah.
Those are decisions that our teachers are free to make for themselves, and I'm advising as needed.
Fantastic. And I assume you probably get everyone together to do professional development every now and then, do you? Where you can sort of talk through things you found and things at work. And
Sure. So getting people in the same room to do professional development is not something that I have actively done yet. I do one-on-one professional development. So not only am I shadowing teachers on a regular basis, but also Google Docs have been phenomenal because every teacher has a Google Doc feedback log and a Google Doc evaluation log. The feedback log is for them to give me thoughts about how lessons are going, and then I chime in with my responses to that as needed. And the evaluation log is for me to collect any feedback that I get from the parents that they're working with, any feedback from a shadowing day, and you know, resources for them to see what's going right and what needs a little work. So I think Google Docs are amazing. I'm obviously always free by phone for phone consultations as needed, but the Google Docs are on a regular schedule. So that gives us a reason to communicate and to make sure that I don't lose the thread on any major issues that are going on.
And how many times would you shadow a teacher in a year, let's say?
Yeah, if it's their first year, I want to see them two or three times during that year. And for my veteran teachers, I check in a shadowing context once a year, typically. And then, you know, we have the Google Docs going in the meantime to keep the conversation going. I mean, I'll be honest with you. Teachers who are completely off when it comes to philosophy and interpersonal skills and the mechanics of teaching are not going to magically become great teachers due to 6 months or a year of professional development. So, I mean, really, hiring is the golden ticket. Professional development is great. I don't want teachers to be actively doing horrible work. And if there are little structural fixes that we can make, absolutely, I want to make those. But it is not my job to turn a lump of coal into a diamond. A teacher has to have a pretty good set of skills right out of the gate. And then, you know, I can finish the final 10%. Based on observation and feedback logs and things like that.
Great. Well, that's a really good segue to this very important question of getting the hiring right. How do you make sure you're not hiring a lump of coal, as you say? How do you find the diamonds that just need a bit of polishing? What are some of the tips?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's easiest to explain in the context of what my hiring process is actually like.
That'd be great.
You know, it'll start out with me putting out a call, either on Craigslist or in Chicago. We have an online resource called Chicago Artist Resource, which is very well trafficked. Obviously my favorite way to find teachers is personal referrals from current teachers. And we've even tried our hand over the years with some recruiting services, some of which have worked better than others. So I have this pool of talent that I'm evaluating. And, you know, just based on a resume, I kind of have my list of things that send out good signals to me and things that send out bad signals, as I'm sure anybody that runs a business does.
Can you give us a couple of quick examples?
Yeah. So, I mean, something that would strike me right away as being good is a sense of humor. Yep. It's not a musical quality whatsoever, but it is so critical for working with kids. That if they kind of are able to display some wit in the context of just sending some emails back and forth about sending out an interview, man, I am all over that.
Right.
And being pop friendly, right? Yeah. So if they come from a conservatory background, but perhaps on the weekends they play in a Backstreet Boys cover band or something like that, like. To
please
me,
no.
To me, that's a sign that there's another side to that person, and that they are not going to be pulling out their hair trying to arrange a Bruno Mars song for a student. Qualities that would make them less likely to get the job. I mean, sometimes it's as simple as geographical, right? So I'm aware of where our target geographical area is for clients. Mm-hmm. And if I see a teacher who is incredibly well-intentioned, but they live on the complete opposite side of the city in a suburb, I can kind of see to the end of the line there that best case scenario, I might have them for a few weeks and then they would say, oh man, I really didn't realize there was this much driving.
Yep.
So it's just experience. And, you know, obviously every time you make a bad hire, you add another note to self for evaluating future candidates.
Absolutely.
So that's the evaluation process. The first interview is kind of a combination of interview and audition. Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe 30 minutes of talking about background, kind of getting a sense for stability, as you were saying before, retention and working with a teacher for multiple years is such a big deal that a lot of times that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah. So having a conversation about where they're at in life and study and
sure.
What they're doing. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And, you know, just getting a sense of who they are. I mean, obviously, if you can talk for 5 minutes with somebody about something they're passionate about, you're going to learn a lot about them as a person, too. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't always have to be right down the line, you know, what is your biggest regret? What is your 5-year plan? Blah, blah, blah.
Oh, I hate those questions. but you know what? They're just so, They're just so staged, aren't they? And unhelpful. Mm-hmm. And everyone asks the same questions. I really hope that people listening who are interviewing teachers don't, you know, just give us your, you know, what do you need to improve about yourself? And all those.
Yeah.
You know, just.
Right.
Yeah.
The classic answer to what do you need to improve about yourself is, I work too hard. I care too much. Kind of turn it into a way to praise yourself again.
Yeah, that's right.
So yes, you can be very squirrely with questions like that. So then after those, you know, 30 to 45 minutes, we head over to their instrument, do a little bit of sight reading. These are not Chopin nocturnes that I'm asking them to sight read. This would be something that a second or third year student could do. Mm-hmm. Cause I just want to see if they have the chops to play something from a book quickly to demonstrate for a student what they will have to play. Mm-hmm. And then I do a couple of other things that are more pertinent to the piano power philosophy. One of them is to give them a little, 5 or 6 note melody and have them harmonize it.
Right.
So in other words, take a simple student composition and develop it into a more full-fledged piece. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is I hand them an iPod and give them a pop song and say, okay, arrange a very simple version of this song in 20 minutes that is appropriate for a second or third year student.
Wow. That's a great, that's a really good question. That's a good challenge. Yeah, that would tell you so much about the teacher.
Absolutely. And you know, frequently the ones who fall on their face during something like that are the conservatory trained musicians who are no doubt absurdly talented at activities like that, but they just don't know what to let go. They don't know how to simplify a rhythm. They don't know how to take out the tied notes and make it more easily playable. Because really I'm looking to see what their skills are on the ground in the real world when they're presented with a situation like that. So, I mean, you know, I've had teachers, candidates that were conservatory trained who have, you know, kind of walked out of the interview shaking their heads and saying, I don't know how you expect anybody to do that in 20 minutes, you know. And I get that.
Yeah.
But I've had, you know, musicians who are more experienced in rock music and writing charts and things like that who bang it out in 10 minutes and it's simple, but it's accurate and playable.
Yeah.
So you're not expecting those them are the to, skills.
Yeah. Sorry. You're not expecting them to notate it. It's just create an arrangement that you could then teach a student. By rote, here's the chord progression. Let's do that. And why don't you play the melody in your right hand? It goes like this or something.
Sure. They could do it that way. I do have others who notate it fully, but they'll just simplify it enough to make it playable. So that's all good as well. So assuming they do a great job with that, then there is a second interview, which is 30 minutes with a sample student that they will probably never see again, but who has volunteered for that job. So,
that in your office, like, you know, your home?
No, I typically do that in the suburbs. I have a family that I've worked with for a long time who volunteers their living room.
Oh, really?
For the occasion.
And their children?
Sometimes their kids are so old right now that they've kind of aged out, and they're also their kids are also too well behaved, so they're not good candidates for the job. Ideally, I'll have like a slightly squirrely 7-year-old who is sitting on the bench and has never had a piano lesson before. Obviously, you're going to learn a whole lot about their flexibility and their sense of humor and their patience if you watch them for 30 minutes with a kid. So no teacher gets hired without doing that. And if they make it through both of those hoops, then we move on to calling references, obviously doing a criminal background check and all of that stuff. And so that's the overall hiring structure. And, you know, with the combination of the intuitive skills of just having done it for 10 years and having screwed up a bunch of times along the way, I feel like it's a pretty good filter.
Yeah, it sounds like a great way to assess the skills of a teacher. And it surprises me that schools in particular don't do that kind of thing. You know, they'll do an interview an hour long interview, and often that's it. Sometimes not even hear the teacher play. And of course, as you've said, hearing a teacher play something they've practiced is very different to whether they can teach at all. So I think there's a lot we can learn from you, Abraham. I really appreciate you letting us in on your hiring plan, because we can learn a lot by that, because that is, to me, a really effective way of judging whether someone would be a good fit for you and your method.
It's my pleasure. Thank you. Thank you for saying that. And it does, you know, it does require more time on the front end. So, I mean, again, if we're going for like hockey stick growth through the stratosphere and you're just trying to hire as many teachers as possible, you're not going to take the time to have them jump through all those hoops. And bully for you, I'm sure in your first year, you will have hundreds of students. But as far as longevity and having great teachers that stick around, I firmly believe in investing that kind of time up front.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, it's going to pay off, isn't it? You find the right teachers, then they make good contacts with your students. They will sell your program to the friends of the students they're teaching. Things will grow organically. They'll hopefully hang around for a bit longer. So you're right. If you front load the time and you get things right at the beginning, even though it does take longer at the beginning, you can often save yourself time down the track. I think it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And I mean, to your point, my wife and I certainly experiment with various marketing strategies all the time, but I have found this particular market to be largely resistant to marketing. It's word of mouth is still absolutely the dominant force in finding new clients. And you don't get that without great teachers. You don't get a solid word of mouth referral presence without having teachers that represent your brand, as it were, in a great way.
That's great. And of course, the hiring strategy that you've just outlined would work perfectly well for teachers in a bricks and mortar studio too. You know, that's not specific to the traveling model.
Right. I don't watch them drive around a racetrack or anything like that.
That's it. Yeah, as long as they get there, they're driving. So they're, and their cars aren't emblazoned with your logo. So they're bad drivers, that's not going to reflect on you, right? I don't know if you have that in the States, but we have it over here. Our big companies will have on the back of their trucks, they'll say, you know, how's my driving today? Call phone number.
Oh, yeah, we got that.
Which is brilliant for the people who own these companies. You know, if there's a phone number on there, hopefully their drivers will behave appropriately. So I think it makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So look, we're going to start the final few questions, but I guess let's just talk marketing very quickly. Do you do any, I mean, you've mentioned now that word of mouth, we all know that word of mouth is the best marketing. Do you tend to do any local flyers, Facebook advertising, anything like that these days, or not really?
Yeah. So honestly, we are total babies with all this stuff. And by babies, I mean, we are in the infant stages of experimenting with other forms of marketing. So I certainly don't want to come across as a guru. This is all trial and error for us. Mm-hmm. In the past year or year and a half, we've started thinking a lot more about SEO, search engine optimization, for those of you who aren't a super nerd. So we just want to make sure that when, you know, somebody Googles piano lessons and the name of their suburb in Chicago, that we are on page one.
Yep.
So that kind of thing is important. We have experimented with some Google AdWords ads and some Facebook ads and things like that. But again, we've just started doing that over the past year or so. My inclination, and this is, again, every market is unique. But my inclination about our market is that our money would perhaps be better spent just taking out little ads in school programs. You know, this dance recital is sponsored by Piano Power, provides lessons in your suburb.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all super small time. It's not very techy. It's not sexy and glamorous, but, you know, things like hanging a flyer on somebody's door or taking out a little ad in a school phone directory or something like that. Maybe that's just more appropriate to our market than dominating Twitter.
Yeah.
You know?
It's all about testing, isn't it? You've got to
try
the dance brochures, dance studio brochures for a term or whatever it is, and see what happens. So
yeah.
I was just thinking then, how big do you think Piano Power could get? Is there any limit to the growth that you could have?
My sanity would probably be the limit.
And how fast you can hire the right teachers too, I guess.
Sure.
And there are the right teachers out there. I mean, eventually maybe you'd start running out of people who can do the pop and the arranging. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I think my wife and I are deeply philosophical when it comes to issues of money and time. So for example, we have one car and it's a 1998 Volvo that looks like it's completely falling apart. And my plan is to drive that thing into the ground.
Right.
So, I mean, our need to live high on the hog is not really what's affecting Piano Power's growth strategy. Personally, I would be fine if it stayed at exactly the same size for the next decade. As far as like room to grow, you know, I think delegation is a key factor in that. Not to go all Tim Ferriss on you, but if you were to read the 4-Hour Workweek, he has some good things to say about knowing when a task is able to be passed off to another person. Mm. I have at this point, including myself, a 4-person admin team. Everybody's part-time, but they are taking a lot of stuff off my plate that has allowed Piano Power to get to this level. Mm. I imagine that if I woke up tomorrow and it was 600 kids instead of 400, that would mean increasing the admin staff accordingly.
Yeah.
I think there's room to grow, especially in the city, since about 90% of our students are still in the suburbs. But by the same token, as far as like franchising it or trying to get to 1,000 or anything like that, I'm not really motivated by goals like that. Because again, I was lucky enough to marry a woman who feels pretty similarly about money to me, in the sense that you want enough to be comfortable and have a nice life. But it is kind of gauche to want to move into the Trump Tower.
I was just thinking of Trump. I'm like thinking of someone swimming in a pile of cash. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. You don't want your skin to turn orange. Watch out. Watch out, everybody.
All right. So let's get some just overall tips for any piano teachers listening to this, who are thinking, you know what, I reckon I could give this a go. Whether it's the traveling kind of model or a bricks and mortar academy or studio, what tips would you give them for going out in this and expanding?
Well, I mean, here's what I would say. Like, I am lucky enough to find all of the aspects of running a business very fascinating. Like, I'm 10 years into it, and I love super nerdy things like spreadsheets, like writing standard operating procedures, like coming up with ways to manage people. I love helping other people solve their problems. So, I mean, like anything else, I think if you're going into it purely with a profit motive and not understanding that this is an entirely different skill set from teaching lessons, and you're not at least modestly fascinated and intrigued by the skill set that this job requires, this job will burn you out in 6 months and you'll say, that's the stupidest thing I ever did. I'm going back to being a teacher. Mm. And that's fine.
Yeah.
Because if you're a teacher and you're great at it and you're making enough money to pay your bills, you're doing really well. So I'm not here to like sell this entrepreneurial model to everybody. I think the most important thing to do at the outset is to kind of do a self-analysis and to make sure that you find the skills of running a business to be intriguing to you. I mean, not to ramble on too long about this, but I was in bands for a long time throughout my 20s and early 30s. And always in my head, I thought that being in a band was the best, and that if I had a chance to make a go of it as a touring musician, that would be the best life for me. The reality was, I did not find that lifestyle as fascinating as I find the entrepreneurial lifestyle to be.
Yeah.
And that is a personality quirk that I have, and I think you have as well.
Definitely.
And those are skills to kind of analyze yourself at the outset and make sure that they line up with what you're trying to do. Because otherwise, I could talk your ear off about how much fun I have running Piano Power, and it might not relate to you at all.
Yeah, that's a fantastic answer to that question. And I'm really glad that you brought it up, because there's absolutely no point going into a business if you haven't got a passion for it, for trying it out, and for ongoing learning. Like, I am always listening to business podcasts, reading books, just trying out new software that will help me automate a task.
Yep.
Learning about hiring people overseas that can help you with things as you're doing. In some ways, I think we might well be on a bit of a similar level in regard to the kind of business thinking that we've got going on. Because I'm at that stage of I've hired people to help with the podcast and various things in the business, and it's so important to. And I still don't necessarily do it all that well, but to try and focus on what I'm good at, and to pass on those tasks which other people can do to help, because that's the best way to build and scale a business. And it sounds like you're doing exactly the same thing. So it's great. Really, really fantastic conversation. Thank you so much for your time and for sharing all those gems. Hope we've inspired some people.
My pleasure. And I would be happy to do it again anytime. You are a pleasure to talk to, and I agree that we are on a similar path in a lot of respects. So
yeah,
hopefully we can keep in touch.
Very cool. Now, being in Chicago, are you going to be around next July when the NCKP comes to town?
You're going to have to help me out with that one. What is the NCKP?
Okay, so the National Conference on Keyboard Pedagogy, which is one of my favorite events to come to in the States.
Great.
Happens in... it's about an hour out of town, opposite direction to the lake. I'm trying to remember the place. Can't remember. Anyway, I'll find out for you.
Yeah.
I'll send you the details.
Yeah, but please do.
Yeah, I tend to come it's every 2 years, and sometimes hang around Chicago. So let's make sure we hook up and have a meal or something like that.
Absolutely. That would
Sounds
be great.
Good. All right. Now, where do people go to find out a little bit more about you?
Pianopower.org.
Yeah.
Yes.
And tell us
pianopower.org.
When I saw that you've got this great setup with your mic and your headphones, I asked if you did a podcast, and lo and behold, you do. So tell us about that quickly.
How about that? Yes. My podcast is called Nerds on Tour. That is Nerds on Tour, and it is available on iTunes. And I talk with musicians, some of them famous, some of them not so famous, about money, motivation, and the rest of life. So essentially the non-musical aspects of life that actually keep them going. And sometimes we do get into the financial weeds a little bit, but other times it's really just a matter of their own workflow and how they put food on the table. I've talked to people like John Doe from the band X. I've talked to Lita Ford, who was a hair metal star back in the 80s. And I've talked to some indie folks as well. And it is just fascinating to see them as people who are trying to put a budget together instead of triumphant rock stars jumping off the top of a PA.
And smashing equipment. Brilliant. So that was Nerds on Tour on the iTunes store for those podcasts listeners. Brilliant.
Sure.
Oh, thank you so much for your time today, Abraham. Let's definitely keep in touch.
Oh, yeah.
Appreciate your blog post as well from a couple of weeks back. We'll make sure we link up to that in the show notes. And all the details will be, as usual, in our show notes at timtoppin.com/episode67. Thank you very much. We'll speak to you soon.
Thank you, Tim. And America will survive the Trump presidency.
All the best over there. You have fun. All right. We'll catch you later. Thank you.
All right. Thanks.
See ya. Hi, everyone. It's Tim here again. Thank you very much for listening to or watching today's episode. I do hope you got something out of it. I put them together to be as relevant and useful to you in your studio and your teaching as possible. So do let me know your feedback. If you've got any questions, comments, critique, whatever it is, you can email me at admin@timtoppin.com. Now, before we go, I did want to mention a few little reminders. Firstly, if you're looking for transcripts of every episode from episode 50 onwards are available at the show notes page. And you can either view the transcript on screen or you can download a PDF that you can use to research and refer to. To find the show notes of any episode of Tim Topham TV, just type in timtopham.com/episode and then the number. So, e.g., timtopham.com/episode20. Now, as you may have heard, I am offering currently you guys, my loyal podcast listeners, some of the most dedicated teachers I know, a $100 discount off annual membership of my Inner Circle. The code you need to access that is TTTVpodcast, all one word, and the place you're going to find out more about what you get for membership, the benefits, hear some testimonials of current members. The place you go is timtopham.com/community. Finally, if you have a suggestion for a guest, I would always love to hear about it. A lot of you guys have some fantastic connections. So if you're thinking of anyone that would be really cool to interview, please email me admin@timtopham.com. We'll get to me and I look forward to hearing from you and we'll see you in the next episode.
If the idea of a piano teacher's community where you get to access the best educational resources, rub shoulders with expert teachers from around the world, and have immediate access to feedback for any of your questions, then Inner Circle membership is for you. The Inner Circle is my private community of piano teachers from across the globe who share a commitment to creating and delivering the most inspiring, modern, and progressive learning experiences for their students. Membership is now open, so head to timtopham.com/community to find out more and get involved today. I can't wait to see you on the inside.